Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. Dav Pilkey, the author of the most challenged book of 2013, is on his way to town for a couple of public appearances. His Captain Underpants series has been challenged on many counts. Offensive language, anti-family content, modeling bad behavior, and encouraging children to disobey authority. In anticipation of the author's visit, we're talking with a local librarian about controversies that arise over children's literature. Joining us for this conversation is Naftali Ferris, who serves as early literacy manager for the Kansas City Public Library. Hi, Naftali. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, a little vocabulary for us. What's the difference between a challenged book and a banned book?
A challenge book is a book that has had a formal complaint raised against it in some way or another. This can be, you know, a form filled out as we do at the Kansas City Public Library. This could be a formal petition brought before a school board. But it's just the challenge itself. It's somebody has raised a concern. A banned book is a book that has actually been removed from a collection.
Any collection?
Yes. Any collection. So,
Is there a formal process that gets books on the most challenged list that the American Library Association puts out?
As far as I know, there's no formal process beyond the American Library Association simply collecting the data. The Office of Intellectual Freedom and the Freedom to Read Foundation, both parts of the American Library Association, they collect that information and use for their statistics for that list of most challenged titles.
What's your own personal experience with challenged or banned books?
I haven't had a whole lot of experience with it. It's never been something I've really dealt with. I have served on the Intellectual Freedom Committee, which helps assist with challenges and that kind of thing.
Assist with fighting the challenges, that is?
Providing materials to librarians dealing with challenges, school boards dealing with challenges. If there are questions that come up, that committee seeks to help them in any way possible. The closest I've gotten to a banned material is we did have a patron when I was a librarian in Chicago who liked to draw censor bars over characters in graphic novels she felt were a bit too explicit.
Hmm. So that's not quite self-censorship, but something like a vigilante censor.
Exactly.
How does a library deal with someone like that? I mean, that's state property, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But it's also freedom of speech,
It's freedom of speech. She's free to express whether or not she feels those materials are a valuable part of the collection. The trick was catching her, figuring out who it was that was adding their own art to the book. But really, we just asked her to stop. And she did.
In your interactions with parents and with children, when a book gets attention for being controversial in some way, and specifically a children's book, what kind of interactions do you have with your patrons surrounding that? Do people tend to have more questions about those books, or does it not really hit their radar?
To be perfectly honest, it doesn't hit most people's radar, I find. There's a lot of people who seek out that information. And teenagers in particular, if they hear that a book has been banned, they're going to be more interested in reading it. There was kind of a run on Vonnegut after he got banned at a Republic high school. Challenged. But generally, I've found it generates more interest than it does dissuade any kind of reader or bring up any concerns really on the part of a parent. Some of the parents will want to see the book. Just so that they can know where the concern comes from. But I've never had a parent say, well, we can't read this.
Have you ever encountered a book that has struck you as genuinely, like, possibly dangerous or damaging for young readers, and to the extent that you wanted to protect kids from it rather than guiding them toward it?
I can't say I've ever wanted to take the book out of the hands of a kid. One thing a lot of librarians like to say is that not every book is for every reader, but every book has a reader. I try and be open and honest with parents, with caregivers, with children about what's in the book. If I have something that I think if there's something in that book that I think might be difficult for them, I try to be honest about the content, because you never want the reader to be surprised or offended by something you've suggested to them. So there, I try and have that conversation with anybody I suggest a book to, but I've never said, no, you can't read that.
Societally, do we have a responsibility to protect children from certain content and literature, or is there a better way of dealing with challenging material?
I don't know if there is a better way, because we always want, I think, those who care for children to have a voice in what the children are reading, are experiencing. But I think that we go overboard sometimes. Children take in what they can. They understand what they are able to, and they process it in the ways that are helpful to them. And if there's something in a book that they don't get or that's scary to them or disturbing, most of the time they're going to gloss over that. But ultimately, I think it's helpful to broaden a child's world and make it as open and wide as possible.
This is kind of a broad question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because it's a sort of missed question, I think, that's really at the heart of this debate about children's literature. What's the purpose of children's literature? Is it different from literature in general?
I would say it probably is a little bit, because for children, literature is the beginnings of the world. Your world as a child is so small. It's limited to what your caregivers show you. It's limited to what you experience firsthand. And everything is new. So through literature, you see the wider world. You learn that there are people who don't necessarily look like you or talk like your parents or, you know, have jobs like your aunt and uncle. There is this huge world. And until you can go out and do it for yourself, the primary way in which you experience that world is through reading. And, well, I mean, you can make the argument television, that kind of thing as well. But I think reading is huge for young children. And beyond just the benefits of literacy that we've seen, you know, the synapses forming in the brain and all that, I mean, literature is, I think, hugely important for children. And that's where you get the awkward balance in terms of content, I think, because we think because literature is so important to children, then that means it's got to be a teaching moment. It's got to be moralistic, or, you know, we've got to give them the right information as opposed to just presenting them with information and knowledge and experiences and letting them sort it out for themselves.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman talking with librarian Naftali Ferris about children's books that have been challenged or banned. What do you think about controversial children's literature? How do you help your own kids navigate all of the eye-opening material to be found on bookshelves? Do you give them free rein? Restrict their choices? Maybe something in between? Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888 to weigh in. Naftali Ferris, let's talk about some specific titles that might ring bells with our listeners. I have a list of the most challenged books of the 1990s and the first decades of the 2000s sitting in front of me. Do you mind if I toss out a few children's and young adult titles for us to discuss?
Sure.
Okay, so The Witches by Roald Dahl. This one I bring up because I so distinctly recall my fourth grade teacher reading this one out loud to my class. It was a huge hit, and every 9-year-old in that room was just entranced. Could you recap the plot and explain the debates over it?
Well, a really brief plot synopsis is you have a young boy who is orphaned, and he now lives with his grandmother, his Norwegian grandmother. I don't know why I remember she was Norwegian, but she was. She gets pneumonia at some point, and they end up at kind of like a spa hotel in England. And the boy discovers a coven, like a meeting of all these witches, and he kind of has to go about defeating them. And at some point he gets turned into a mouse, and it's actually quite a lot of fun.
This one has been challenged in both the UK and the United States, but for different reasons. It seems like in the UK, the concern is about misogyny because all of the witches are women. And in the US, it's about children rising up against adults and never getting punished, with a little bit attention given to perhaps the appeal of the occult.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of those criticisms having read this book?
It's interesting to me that it's the misogyny that bugs the UK. It makes sense, though. You have the witches, who are ultimately defeated by the male, the young boy, who is seemingly the only male in the entire book. But I don't know. It's so much of Dahl's literature is about empowerment of the child and the child taking control of their lives and their own person, more specifically, which I think is hugely important for children. Sometimes it's just necessary to see the child buck the system because they've got to know that they can be in charge of who they are and what they do and how they react to circumstances. We don't give them a lot of authority to be their own person sometimes. So I say more books where children ignore the authority.
It seems like that would be an appealing character to a child.
I fully agree. And it's one, actually, you see in Dahl's literature over and over again. You see it in Matilda. You see it even in Charlie and Chocolate Factory. It's about being your own person. And that is hugely appealing to a child, especially when you consider they get very little control over their own world. And this is a way in which they can see that they are agents of their own lives.
What about The Stupids, a series by Harry Allard and James Marshall?
I'm not sure I've read this one.
Oh, really? There's a series of books, and it's about a family whose last name happens to be Stupid. And that's one of the objections is...
It uses the word stupid.
Yeah.
That does not shock me. You see a lot of that where people react to language or kind of defamation of character, I guess. And especially in children's books. Like, we think it's... Children don't know that the word stupid is harmful, but we also need to teach them that language can be funny and have multiple meanings. So, yeah, that one's interesting.
Pretty much everything by Judy Blume is on this list. Can we talk about maybe, let's say, Blubber, or is there another Judy Blume title you'd prefer to discuss?
We can talk about Blubber. I always liked that one when I was a kid.
Do you remember the plot of it?
You have... essentially a group of middle school girls or late elementary, I can't remember which, and they decide to target one of their classmates. She's heavyset, and they start calling her Whale and Blubber and that kind of thing. And it's kind of what goes through the mind of the bully as this is happening.
Do you know why people have wanted to see this book banned?
I believe it has to do with the depictions of the bullying. It's rough to read, but I think if we say to children, you know, if we don't put the depictions of bullying out there, then we're saying this part of your life, which we know you see, it's not happening.
Do you think that, the bully or the victim stands to benefit more from seeing this particular depiction?
I think the bully, because there's the internal conflict that we're privy to through that book. It's important for them to know that there is moral ambiguity to what you're doing.
Well, let's hear from Richard in Kansas City, Missouri, who called us at 816-235-2888. Hi, Richard.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Good. Well, I'm enjoying the conversation and wanted to just comment in terms of we're a relatively conservative Christian family, and our kids are adults now, but our daughter was in second grade when the first Harry Potter book came out. And we were a little bit hesitant to let her read it, but we did, and then we read it as a family and fell in love with the series. And my daughter is now a voracious reader. I would say it had no impact on her faith whatsoever. It was just really good stories, good characters. So I just wanted to bring that into the conversation.
What do you think, what changed when you read the actual book as opposed to when you had just heard about it that had raised concerns?
Well, I think, you know, the whole aspect of witchcraft, and you mentioned the Roald Dahl book on witchcraft. I've not read that one, but But that witchcraft is associated with Satanism, and it was just kind of a flag for us that we didn't want to encourage our daughter to explore witchcraft. Again, the characters, it was really more than witchcraft. I think the story is about good versus evil. And it was very good from that perspective.
Thanks so much, Richard.
Yeah.
So, Naftali, in the case of Harry Potter and other books where maybe witchcraft is sort of just something that kids find fascinating, but do you think that the role that witchcraft plays in these kinds of stories, how would you characterize it?
Well, in Harry Potter, I think it's a function of the character, but it's not the entirety of the story.
Explain that.
It's a piece of who they are without being all that they are. Yes, there is this magical battle that continues throughout the whole of the story, but like Richard said, it's ultimately about good and evil. It's ultimately about finding who you are, developing who you are, growing as a person, learning your limits, learning how far you'll go when you believe that you're doing what is right. I think because it's a piece of the story and not all of the story, that there are greater themes at play there. I think that's why it transcends some of those classifications in terms of, I mean, witchcraft doesn't subsume the story.
Let's talk about In the Night Kitchen by Maurice Sendak, who's best known for Where the Wild Things Are. Can you tell us about In the Night Kitchen?
Well, In the Night Kitchen is actually, it's a picture book, like much of what Sendak did. And it's just a little boy essentially having a dream. This one cracks me up because it got banned because one of the panels, the little boy's naked.
And he's naked in his own dream.
In his own dream, yes. And he's kind of tumbling. And then at some point he's kind of, I believe he's in a cooking pot and he's getting like baked by these chefs. But it's a dream. It's all set up to be kind of absurdist. So I personally love it. I think it's gorgeous. It's one of Sendak's best.
It's the nudity, though, that was the problem?
I believe so.
And when you say that you love this book, I guess we're focusing on what is being objected to in these books. Mm-hmm. What did you like so much about the book?
I think it's some of Sendak's best artwork. It is beautiful, and it's got this gorgeous through line that just, I think, carries each page. I remember as a child, Sendak kind of scared me. Like, I was always afraid something was waiting off the edge of the page, and especially in Where the Wild Things Are. You just knew something bad was coming along. And of course, it never really did. But in the Night Kitchen, it's just sweet and it's comforting and it feels like your childhood dream. So I've always appreciated that one.
Shortly before Sendak died, he did a really great interview with Stephen Colbert where Colbert asked him why he wrote for children. And his answer was that he didn't. He said he wrote and that other people said that's for children. And he also kind of groused that people underestimate the complexity of children, which is maybe kind of related. Do you think that's true? How does the complexity of children enter into this question of what is and isn't appropriate for children to read?
I think that's the whole question. Ultimately, when we say to children, this book is above you, or this book is too much for you, or something in this book is objectionable, we're saying you don't have the complexity as a human being to understand what's happening. And sometimes they won't. Sometimes it is above a kid's head. But I think that we have to give the child the chance to try. And, classifying children's literature as simplistic literature is, I think, degrading not only to the producers of that literature, but to the child reader, saying you don't merit something that's complex. You don't merit something that is maybe morally ambiguous because you only deserve what's simplistic. And I think that's what we do when we challenge materials, is we say, you can't understand these things, and therefore you need to be protected and hidden from it.
Well, we've talked about the dangers of letting kids read books with disturbing content, but is there danger in not letting them read that stuff?
I think maybe there is, because so many children don't run into these experiences. But there's a sense of, I know for me personally, having read a wide variety of things as a child, I felt in some ways more equipped to deal with emotional complexities as I got older, because I knew, I mean, as ridiculous as it sounds, I could point back to a character in literature and say, they made it through this. Like, I can make it through what's going on now. And it's something that's carried me through my whole life and continues to work for me. So I think it may not be a danger, but I think there's so many benefits to exposing children to a wide variety of literature that it kind of, yeah, it creates its own supporting argument.
Is there a book that you think handles the darker stuff of childhood particularly well, maybe in an uncontroversial way?
Ooh, in an uncontroversial
way. Or not necessarily, but in a way that kind of isn't part of this debate, but maybe just for most readers, this is a book that just handles that dark stuff really, really well.
I have always felt that The Tale of Despero by Kate DiCamillo handles darkness, the idea of darkness, very well. She won the Newbery for it, and she actually spoke to it in her Newbery speech, because there was some criticism. But ultimately, she said, you know, children see these dark things. They know there is darkness in the world. And by denying it, we're in some ways harming them. So we need to have these open conversations about what darkness is and how we experience it. But there's also the clever conceit of those characters experiencing the darkness in life ultimately being like mice and rats. So it removes it a step for the child so that they don't necessarily feel threatened themselves, but get to see an interesting character go through interesting things, which may be classified as darker. I've always felt like the character of Roscuro, who's kind of the bad guy, he's the anti-hero, but he's not the villain, you know? And I love that she took that lane in a children's book, because so often we don't let them see the anti-heroes. We have to make the bad guys the true bad guys.
Could you just summarize the plot of that book for those who don't know it?
Sure. It's the story of Despero, who is a mouse in a castle, and he falls in love with a princess, the human princess. And
complicated.
It is very complicated. And he wants to be a knight. He wants to protect her. And he's so very un-mouse-like, and it's threatening to the mouse community. So ultimately, he gets banished. And while this is going on, you have Roscuro, the rat, who has seen light, and he becomes fascinated with the light. And that's not something a rat's supposed to want. So he does all this stuff. And in his own mind, he's kind of the hero because he's just trying to get back to the light. But everybody else is really frightened by him because he's doing some questionable things in order to get that. And so it's the clash between the princess and the human world and Despero and the mouse world and Roscuro and the rat world.
I've always wondered about this thing developmentally with the characters in children's books so often being animals who talk and do. I mean, I feel like the average 3-year-old might be very unsurprised if like a dog came up and started talking or like doing carpentry.
I think that would be very true. I think so often we put words in the mouths of animals because we think it's somehow going to be more acceptable for children. I don't know if that's true or not. It's certainly interesting the amount of anthropomorphic animals we have existing in children's literature. It does make it a little easier, I think, at times for children to process what's happening because it doesn't, interestingly enough, as absurd as that is, it's easier to see like a cute character go through weird things sometimes than to see a human go through it. You know, if it's a human little boy, it might be a little too close to home. Whereas a mouse getting banished from his weird mouse world under a castle, it somehow fits.
Well, we can't let this conversation conclude without addressing, of course, the series that brings us here today, Captain Underpants. Please explain the premise of that series by Dav Pilkey.
Captain Underpants is the story of two elementary-aged boys who decide that they are going to hypnotize their school principal into believing he is a superhero called Captain Underpants. And Captain Underpants saves the school and the world over and over again from ridiculous supervillains such as lunch ladies or I believe there's like a janitor who's got an army of toilets or something. So, you know, it's pretty cool. And it's a young graphic novel. It's got graphic sections to it. So it's action and pictures and really funny and gross out humor. And it's a lot of fun.
What is the target age group for this book? Or for the series, excuse me.
Well, for the series, really, they're targeting more of the younger readers, which is why I think it's been challenged, because some of the stuff is really gross. But it's, you're looking at late elementary kids, so like fourth, fifth, sixth graders, maybe? Third graders.
This was an installment of this series was the most challenged book of 2013. Does that surprise you? Because that's the most, not just children's, there's some racy stuff on
exactly.
this list. And Captain Underpants is squarely at the top of it.
That, I have to admit, that one did surprise me. Because Captain Underpants tends to bounce around on the list. It's pretty much been on the list since it was published. But it's been out for a minute now. And I was surprised to see it top the list. It's always up there. I think because it is for younger readers. People feel the need to challenge it more.
Well, Naftali Ferris, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you this morning.
I've had a lot of fun.
Naftali Ferris is the early literacy manager at the Kansas City Public Library.